Chapter 15, 1918 and the Consequences of War, the Imminent Collapse. Although the Austrian school was critical of the historical, ethical school's belief in the state during the Methodenstreit, its position had gradually changed by the turn of the century. Karl Menger's fundamentally sceptical attitude toward the state receded in direct proportion to the increase in the number of his postdoctoral students who entered into civil service. The scepticism disappeared almost entirely after Menger's withdrawal in 1903. An increasingly symbiotic relationship with the state ensued. Active involvement of Austrian school members in the administration of the state reached its culmination precisely in the years of the so-called war and transition economy, 1912-1919. This was especially calamitous for the Austrian school. It had never before had such opportunities for influencing others. Its representatives taught at three Viennese universities and at the Export Academy. They played a leading role in the Gesellschaft Österreichische Volkswirte, Society of Austrian Economists, and even had their own publication, the Zeitschrift für Volkswirtschaft, Sozialpolitik und Verwaltung, Journal of Economics, Social Policy and Administration. Five habilitierte scholars had been appointed to the Herrenhaus in succession. Five had become ministers, some even several times, and two became members of the Reichsrat. Five out of a total of 17 habilitierte economists and public finance experts had become excellencies, and were therefore highly ranked representatives of the monarchy. Aside from holding top positions in public administration and in the press, members of the school were found in the Chamber of Commerce and in higher echelons of large banks and industrial conglomerates. For example, Rudolf Sieghardt, Bodenkreditanstalt, and Julius Landesberger, Anglo-Österreichische Bank. Toward the end of the war, the influence of the school reached its height. Among its members were a prime minister and head of the emperor's cabinet, Ernst von Seidler, several ministers, Ernst von Seidler, Friedrich von Wiese, Viktor Mataja, the last president of the Reichsrat, Gustav Gross, representatives of university administration, Richard Schuller, Ignaz Gruber, Hans Meyer, Richard Rasch, and leading members of the central administration of the war economy, for example, Josef Schumpeter, Eugen Peter Schwedland, or Julius Landesberger. The Gesellschaft Österreichische Volkswirte, which in 1897 had a total of 232 members, served as a forum in which representatives of administration, politics, press, and business could meet. Banker Richard von Lieben, 1842-1919, and the sugar magnate and member of parliament Rudolf Auspitz, 1837-1906, were among the regulars there, as were politicians from all parties. The basis of this war and transition economy was the Kriegsleistungsgesetz, War Effort Act, of 1912. It would lay the foundation for the centrally controlled management of all economic sectors deemed strategically important in war, that is, for a state penetration of the economy. The aging Karl Menger, who saw catastrophe looming, warned against this development in vain. Böhm Bawerk also reminded everyone on several occasions in 1914, the year in which he died, that neither politics nor administration could suspend the basic laws of economics. He was clearly pointing his finger at the government, which had begun to finance its costly war preparations by printing money. Up to 91 central offices were established during the war with the help of the Kriegsleistungsgesetz, some of which were in competition with each other. The coordinator was head of the directorate, the highest civil service position within a ministry, Richard Riedel, 1865-1944, whose attempts at management led to a large-scale squandering and to an undesired decline in production, especially in farming. Even in those areas in which sufficient resources were available, there were massive shortages that quickly led to a flourishing black market. Riedel, for whom the term durchorganisieren, to thoroughly organize, became the verb of choice, considered the level of black market prices to be a barometer of goods shortages, thus admitting, with unintentional cynicism, that even he could not dispense with the market. In March of 1917, at the culmination of this hyperstatism, or war socialism, all central offices were answerable to a single Generalkommissariat für Kriegs- und Übergangswirtschaft, General Commission for War and Transition Economy. Most Austrian school economists participated in the work of these institutions of the war economy. Only Ludwig von Mises seemed to have had serious misgivings. The monarchy lacked entrepreneurial spirit. The government budget was inflated. The internal administration was costly and deficient, and publicly owned enterprises were badly managed on the whole. When Mises was assigned to the War Economy Department of the War Ministry, he reported back to the front. His decision may have been made easier by the fact that the department was run by Hans Meyer, and that Otto Bauer and Otmar Spann were working there as well. Mises could hardly conceal his disrespect toward Meyer and Spann. The practice of central economic planning was continued for some time after the end of the war, which indeed suited the plans of the revolutionary socialists. The philosopher Otto Neurath, 1882-1945, thus suggested taking quick advantage of this prepared ground. Since the war organizations were still in existence, the present moment was a particularly good time for nationalization. But surely enough, such statism also prolonged the economy of scarcity. In the winter of 1919-1920, the University of Vienna had to close down for several weeks due to a lack of heating fuel. Poverty at the university also had a direct effect on the Austrian school. The Zeitschrift für Volkswirtschaft, Sozialpolitik und Verwaltung, Journal of Economics, Social Policy and Administration, was discontinued due to financial reasons after 26 years of unbroken publication. Numerous university lecturers from German-speaking universities of former crown lands thronged to Vienna. Some had to take early retirement, but others were given positions in the administration. The number of professorships at German-speaking universities decreased from 2,254, 1913-1914, to 1,206, 1917-1918. Under these unfavorable circumstances, the institutional entrenchment of economics was reconfigured, and a six-semester degree program of political science was set up in all law faculties. The following subjects became canonical: economics, economic policy, administration studies, public finance, economic history, statistics, political science, international law, general history, and economic geography. For the first time, women were admitted as fully matriculated students. The title awarded upon completion of a degree program was Doctor RER Pol, Doctor Rerum Politicarum, which, by the way, was not recognized as an academic qualification for legal positions in public administration. International isolation that had developed during the war further paralyzed the Austrian school. Since the school had always championed a universal understanding of science and had cultivated lively exchange with economists from all over the world, this hit something of a nerve center. The war had now destroyed their extensive network of contacts. Even more far-reaching and no less devastating were the effects of the great social changes that occurred during and after the war. Members of the Austrian school stemmed predominantly from the nobility. Johann von Komorzinski, Karl Menger von Wolfensgrün, Friedrich von Wiese, Eugen von Böhm-Barberg, Eugen von Philippowitz, Hermann von Schuller zu Schattenhofen, Ludwig von Mises, at this point in time Friedrich A. von Hayek, and Gottfried von Habeler were just beginning their studies. All from the educated and propertied middle classes. Robert Meyer, Gustav Gross, Victor Mataya, Robert Zuckerkandel, Hermann Schwedland, and Richard Schiller. And some had only recently been given titles. Julius Landesberger von Arndheim, Ignaz Gruber von Menningen, and Ernst Seidler von Feuchtenegg. Strictly speaking, they were the true losers of the war. Originally, the ruling classes of the Habsburg monarchy, who now saw themselves exposed to progressive material impoverishment as well. There was also the disturbing experience of social powerlessness in the face of the dominance of the left. This was clearly expressed by the crude ban on all aristocratic titles, for example. At the University of Vienna, this new era became painfully apparent when von Philippowitz's vacated professorship was awarded to Otmar Spann, an outspoken and aggressive antagonist of the school. His collectivist or universalist economics appeared to the new ruling powers as a lesser evil, and obvious candidates, Josef R. Schumpeter and Ludwig von Mises, were simply passed over. We can assume that many members of the school, looking back, saw their involvement with the centrally planned war and transition economy as an intellectus sacrificium, effecting a compromise of their worldview. along with economic hardship, social upheaval, international isolation, and hostilities from right and left, they found the situation both depressing and demoralizing. A later historian from the fringes of the Austrian school recalled the absolute desolation and complete hopelessness that prevailed. Like the Viennese middle class, the Austrian school, on account of the events of the period, appeared to be an eagle with broken wings.